You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.
I'm hearing all of your answers. And I'm hearing such a wide variety of things. Right? Some of you, I heard somebody like, the minute I met Shalice, my life was changed forever. I think it was my husband. I could be wrong. He's like, actually, it was the day he met Taylor. Good. I love that for you guys. But we all have these moments. If I think about big moments in my life that I knew everything's going to be different from here on out, first big one I thought of was like the first time I moved out of my parents' house. That's my parents. And then I moved back into my parents' house, and then the second time I really moved out, that was the big, I know I'm not the only person who did that. You're like, I'm never coming back. And then you realize nobody does your laundry or cooks your meals, and you're like, I'm gonna go home. To this day, my dad's always like, come home, honey. I'm like, I'm 40 and married. Like, do you have room for my husband too? So yes, we'll be there. But I remember like moving out of my parents' house, and I was like, I'm an adult now. I remember the first time I moved out of San Diego, out of the state, to a different city. No, it didn't go well. It was a long story for another day. But I remember that being a moment when I was like, independence, like I'm no longer a San Diegan. Get me out of the sunshine. I hate it. Take me to the cold and the winter. And then I came right back. But that moment did change my life, even though it only lasted less than a week, okay? I remember the day I got married. Life-changing. Absolutely life-changing. But probably the most life-changing moment I have ever had in my adult life was when I got my first Costco membership card. And I got that $1.50 hot dog and soda combo, and I was like, heaven has arrived. This is it. Yes, I need 12 toothbrushes. Don't judge me. Like, my life has been forever changed, right? And now my husband and I are really like on the precipice of that realization that our lives are about to change completely because we're about halfway through a pregnancy. And yes, thank you. It's easier to tell from this way. Black is very slimming, but from this way, you can see there's a baby in here. And ready or not, like the baby's coming at some point and our lives will forever be changed. The process of becoming parents was life-changing for Drew and I to begin with. For those of you who don't know our story, we have battled through infertility for about 5 years, went through two very tragic pregnancy losses, one very extensive round of IVF. And it changes you. It can't not change you, right? You go through something like that, it can't not change you. And pregnancy after loss is very complicated. It's unlike anything I could have prepared myself for. And it's really tricky, right? I was just talking to Bree this morning about it, and we were talking about how you're trying to be excited, you're trying to access this joy, you're trying to be really present in the moment, but it's like really challenging when you've lost that thing before to be like, yes, like I'm so excited, and this time it's gonna work, right? Even getting up and saying, this is the first time that I've said it from stage, that we're pregnant and this is happening. And pretty much every day I look at my husband and I'm like, I'm still pregnant, right? And he's like, yes. And I'm like, I wasn't this fat 6 months ago. And he's like, no. And I'm like, are we sure? And he's like, yes, you're a crazy person. I'm like, I know. This is what trauma does to you. It turns you into a crazy person. But this whole experience has been really, really life-changing. And what I've found is that things that maybe in the past have helped get me through a season like that haven't been as helpful. And now what I'm about to say isn't heresy. I'm not saying you shouldn't do all these things, but like prayer doesn't really take me out of the crazy cycle sometimes. As much as I wish it did, I mean, I have prayed more than I have ever prayed in my life through this season, but it doesn't always help me in the way that like I feel like I need to be helped. Meditation, I'm like, let's just be quiet. And my brain's like, let's think about all the things that can go wrong. And I'm like, let's not. Like, I try and I try and I try to do all of these things that I would like hope and pray would help get me through this season and be able to become like excited and joyful and expectant of what's to come. But nothing has really seemed to work except for one thing. And the one thing that kind of helps bring peace and calm is online shopping. And I will not apologize. It is a spiritual experience. It doesn't matter if it's for me or the baby, but like shopping, shockingly, has been like my little act of rebellion against the anxiety and the lies, because when I buy that little cute outfit for like a 9-month-old, what I'm telling myself is like, I'm gonna have a 9-month-old, right? And so even though it feels so like unspiritual, if you ever need an excuse to shop, like it is a spiritual experience, because there's something about this season of change and transition and preparation that when we like put our flag in the sand and say, yes, this thing, I'm preparing for it, I am planning for it, it's gonna happen. For me, like that's when I see God start to kind of work through this season. And so what I've realized is that as spiritual as this experience is, it has caused one problem. It's that I have a lot of stuff now that I didn't have before. And all you parents who have children, you're like, yeah, get ready. Because that stuff just turns into more stuff and more stuff and more stuff and more stuff. And we have so much stuff now because I had a lot of anxiety. So I needed to do a lot of shopping. Now, this doesn't mean I don't want your cute stuff, too. So if you were a parent and you had a little child and you have really cute things, I will take it still. This is my problem to work through, not yours. Bring me all your cute stuff. But it was wild. Like, as soon as my best friend Chelsea found out that I was pregnant, she showed up with bags of things. And it's, like, things that I don't even think I need, but I think she just didn't want to have anymore in her house. And she's like, here, you might need this. I didn't, but you take it. And I'm like, great, I'll put these weird things somewhere in the closet. And I love it. I love having all of these things because somehow it makes me feel a little more prepared, a little calm, a little more at peace, and a little more set in this reality that this is happening. But what I'm starting to realize, and maybe my husband is realizing it more than me, is that adding more and more and more without being intentional about taking things away just quickly adds more chaos and more clutter and more confusion to our physical space, to our emotional space, to our mental space. And it's easy to like lose sight of like what is essential. Have you ever looked through your house and you were suddenly like, where did all this stuff come from? Whose stuff is this, right? Like, I don't remember buying any of this. It was me, I bought all this stuff. My husband's like, where did this come from? I'm like, I don't know. Somebody must have gave it to me as a present. I have to keep it, you know. But we've gotten all of these new things in our house, and now all I can think about is how I need to purge. I need to organize. I need to declutter. I need to empty out our garage. I need to go through our closets. Like, any space of storage in our house needs to be combed through and gotten rid of. And I never really considered like the verse in 2 Corinthians 5:17 to be applicable to cleaning when it says that like the old has gone and the new has come. But it really is so applicable, where you're like, when you're on the verge of a huge life change or the season where you're making space for new things, like you really do have to be intentional about getting rid of the old things. Yeah. So I have this list in my notes app of all the things that I need to do before this baby gets here. And project after project after closet to purge and thing to do. But the problem is that the only thing I actually want to do is eat ice cream and watch reality TV. All I want to do is rest, right? I don't want to do projects. All I really, really want to do is rest. And I'm sure if we took a poll here from 1 to 10, 10 being like, if I don't sleep right now, this moment, I'm going to pass out. And 1 being like, I like feel great. I've never needed a nap. Most of us probably teeter on that higher number side. Right? Anybody else feeling that like, yeah, I could use some rest. I could use a good nap. See, mom, she's holding the baby. This does not bode well for me. And she's like, yeah, just wait. But this is what today's talk is all about. It's all about rest. And I want us to go back to the passage in Matthew that this conversation really centers around. And it's Jesus talking to his disciples. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. The Message version says, are you tired? Yes. Are you worn out? Yes. Burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Doesn't that sound amazing? Are you tired? Burdened? Weary? Are you pregnant? Do you have children? Do you need a nap? Like, come with me. Just get away with me and you'll recover your life. And I love this phrase that he says, you'll learn to live freely and lightly. You will find rest for your souls. It's amazing the number one unsolicited advice that you get as soon as you tell people you're pregnant. They're like, well, you better rest now because you're not going to sleep at all once the baby gets here. This is a problem for me because I am an average of 8 to 10 hours per night of a sleeper. And this is pre-pregnancy. Most nights I would say I am in bed by about 7 p.m. And if you're laughing at me, I am growing life. It is difficult, okay? But this is also pre-baby. I'm tired. I'm 40. I don't know what happened. When I hit 30, I used to stay out all night. I'd be out till 2 a.m. and I'd show up to church the next day. Now I'm 7 o'clock. Really pushing my bedtime here. What's interesting is that the average number of hours that people in the Western countries would sleep originally was about 10 to 12 hours a night. Now it's 6. So for those of you who sleep 6 hours a night, how are you? Are you okay? You can take a nap right now. I will not be offended. There's room right here in the front row. Just lay your little head down. I don't know how I would even survive on 6 hours of sleep a night. It is crazy, but our culture of productivity, just restlessness, of busyness, of work, of hustle, has made it so that we're getting less and less and less of the rest that we need. So when I heard that this week's topic was rest, I was like, yes, I need more of that. I need more rest. 6:30 is not too early to go to bed. I'll eat dinner at 4. I don't care. I want lots and lots of rest. I want more margin. I want more rhythm in my life. I want more sustainability. But here's the thing. When I thought about it, honestly, I was like, I do rest. I rest quite a lot. I have no problem coming home at the end of the day, putting my feet up, getting my hot pad out, turning on my cooking shows, and just waiting for dinner to magically appear in front of me. It doesn't usually, but it's a nice, I have no problem hoping that that would happen. I don't actually have a rest problem. And the more I started thinking about it, I was like, man, I do rest quite a bit, but why then do I still feel tired all the time? And this was pre-baby, so I can't blame it on this poor unborn child. It's not her fault that I have this problem where I rest, but I don't always feel rested. Amen. Have you ever taken up a nap and then you wake up and you feel worse? Yeah, we've all done that, right? It's because when you look at the rhythms, the natural rhythms of sleep for humans, when you go through the cycles of REM sleep, the ideal nap time for us adults is between 20 to 30 minutes. That's it. 20 to 30 minutes. If you go past that, then it has to be 90 minutes or more. So it's either 20 to 30 minutes or 90 minutes or more. If you wake up, let's call it 45 minutes, what you are doing is you're waking up right in the middle of deep sleep. Your body doesn't know how to respond. It throws everything off. So that's why you wake up feeling super groggy or super off. So this past week, my sister-in-law sent me a video reminding me of this fact. And I was stoked because I sleep 19 minutes. That is a nap for me. My husband can tell you this is not a lie. I sleep 19 minutes. I will set an alarm for 20. I will wake up at 19 every single time. My husband will not wake up if we don't wake him up. He will just sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep. So he's more like a 90 plus another 90, maybe another 90 if you just let him. But my brain is just like 19 minutes. You got to wake up or you're not going to feel good. And so I was feeling pretty good about like my rhythms of rest. But then I kind of began to apply that principle to the rest of my life. And I was wondering if that same sort of principle could apply to Sabbath. So go with me in this analogy. My husband and I have been observing Sabbath for about 2 years now. If you don't know what Sabbath is, it's essentially just a day set aside for rest. It's one of the Ten Commandments. It's a command given to us by God that we would work and work, but on the seventh day that we would rest. So Drew and I observe Sabbath typically after, on a Sunday afternoon. So from the time we leave church to the next morning, we do no chores, no work, no house projects. We don't really do much of anything, to the point where one time I forgot to do a presentation for work. I realized it at like 6 p.m. on Sunday night, and my husband was like, nope, you don't get to do that. So I had to wake up at 4 a.m. on Monday to do this entire presentation. Because Sabbath was so important that we not break it, because it was the one time in our lives that we're not resting, or that we're not working and that we're actually resting. So we've done our version of Sabbath pretty consistently, and yet I don't always feel like I'm getting like true, deep rest, like that rest for our souls that God promises. So last week when we watched the video by John Mark Comer and we heard from Pastor Derek, I was really challenged when they started talking about like the boundaries of Sabbath and things that we could and should commit to and begin doing. Because what I started putting together is that yes, while I was technically resting from work and chores and laundry on Sundays, like I wasn't fully disconnected from all of the other stressors of life. And our Sunday afternoons, aside from typically beginning with a nap, for me 19 minutes, for my husband 4 hours, it doesn't really look much different than any of our weeknights. If you just look at it objectively with like what we're doing. And so I started to feel a little convicted that maybe we were doing like Sabbath light. It felt like we had really great intentions with rest and even got into stages of deeper sleep. But it's like then suddenly we were jarred awake and often feeling less rested than before. It's like we were doing Sabbath, but like a half nap. You know, we hadn't really fully gotten committed to like going all in. And I began to wonder if our inability like to commit fully to this practice, to change our environment completely, to disconnect from technology. That one for me is the one that's like, I'm resting as I'm on my phone scrolling for 3 hours through like videos on Instagram, being bombarded in my mind with all this information. I wonder if our inability to stop what we normally do and our desire to just keep doing the things that we normally do, but just eliminating chores, I wonder if it only serves to slow us down instead of fully refreshing us. Because we've never really been able to get to those deep levels of like soul rest. I feel like it's like we committed to getting in shape, but we go to the gym like just in our workout, our work clothes, you know? And we ignore all the other workout options except like calf raises. So Drew and I are like, dude, our calves are jacked. Like we're so strong, but like our cardio sucks and our endurance is awful. But we kind of feel good about ourselves because once a week we like just get jacked on our calves. That's what it feels like. God's like, I want you to be healthy. And I'm like, have you seen my calves? Right? He's like, ooh, cool. But not what I was thinking and not what I was hoping for you. See, I feel like this doing something but not fully committing to it is an American epidemic, one that I am so guilty of, that gives us the appearance of commitment without the actual fruit of the discipline. So heading into parenthood and suddenly realizing that maybe I won't get to bed at 7 p.m. every night. I'm committed to it. We'll see. Drew can raise our child. She'll be great. I don't want to Sabbath light. Going into this next season of life, like, I want Sabbath 2.0. I want a rule of life for myself, for my husband, for our family that not just allows us to stop and rest, but actually restores our bodies, our minds, and our souls. So I began to ask the question, and we started talking about, well, what needs to change? How do I need to live my life differently? What rule of life do I need to create so I can experience this rhythm of rest to the fullest? And there's two things that struck me, and I'm going to end the talk today just talking briefly about these two rules that I think if we could do them with fidelity, consistently, every single week, I believe it would radically change the rhythm, the pace, and the quality of our lives. The first rule, number one, is to be observant. Be observant. There are two places in Scripture where we see this command given to us to Sabbath. And while very similar, there is a distinct difference in the language that I think is important for us to note if we're truly going to understand God's intention for us with Sabbath. The first place we see it is in Exodus 20, when Israel is at the foot of Mount Sinai right after leaving Egypt. They had just gotten out of captivity. The second place we see it is in Deuteronomy 5, where the Israelites are on the edge of the Jordan River right before entering the Promised Land, 40 years later. In both passages, the Sabbath command is very similar, and we'll see this. Both passages say, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to your Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. Both commands, exact same. But what separates these commands one from another is the wording at the very beginning. In Exodus, we see this. It says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. In Deuteronomy, we see this. It says, observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Now, in Exodus, the Hebrew word here for remember is zakar, which literally translated means to have a memory of or to recall. But in Deuteronomy, the Hebrew word is different. It's shamar, which means to keep watch over, to guard and to protect. Deuteronomy doesn't say to simply remember the Sabbath. It says to observe it, to shamar it, to protect it, to guard it. And although possibly maybe you could make the argument that it's like a similar sentence you see that like the language given to the Israelites on the like eve of entering into the Promised Land is one of strong action. It says you're not meant to just know that this thing is there or remember it, but you're meant to do it without fail, without ceasing, without question. You're to observe the Sabbath. So I want you to think about like how we observe holidays. That's usually what we talk about. When we use that word observe, you're like observe the holiday, like a Christmas or an Easter. We observe these holidays every single year without fail. These are holy days, some more than others, but Flag Day, if I got the day off, I would honor and observe Flag Day without fail, religiously. These days are set aside. They're protected. For most people, it's a day off of work for celebration. We would never think to skip Christmas. Even during COVID, we weren't like, we'll get it next year. We're like, I do not care. We are observing Christmas. Or Thanksgiving, I'm not just going to skip it. Or even Memorial Day weekend. That's one of the best weekends. We have Martin Luther King Jr. weekend this weekend. Monday is a holiday. I forgot, but you better believe I'm not going to work on Monday. I'm going to observe the sacrifices of Martin Luther King Jr. and all of the people that rallied and fought and bled and died for our civil rights. It is important that we remember, but also that we observe, that we protect them as sacred. And so to do that, it's not just about a day off from work, right? We have traditions, we have rituals, we have sacred practices that we do to honor these days, to set them apart from every other day. It's not just an invitation, that's the thing. It's a command that God gives us regarding the Sabbath, to observe it. He says, in the same way, it wouldn't feel like Thanksgiving without a feast. It wouldn't feel like Christmas maybe without the presents, or 4th of July like without the hot dogs or the fireworks. He says, your week should not feel the same without the observance of the Sabbath. If you know, you know, right? If you observe the Sabbath, you're probably thinking, amen. Like, I could never go back to working 7 days a week. I could never go back to every single day of my life being filled with productivity and worry. Like, I gotta have that day of rest. If you don't Sabbath, you don't know what you're missing out on yet, right? You can't even imagine what a life like that would possibly even look like. A holiday every single week? What are we, European? My gosh, that's like unfathomable to most of us in our Western culture of productivity, to be like every single week we take a day to rest, no work. But I want you to think about that concept and idea as we talk about the second rule. So yes, rule number one, we need to be observant. And rule number two, as modern day philosopher and poet Kendrick Lamar says, we need to be humble. Be humble. How does humility relate to the Sabbath? You think you can't rest because your family will fall apart without you doing the daily work. You think you can't find a day to rest because your work is so important that it requires every ounce of your energy and life force. You think that what you contribute to this world is so much more important than what you are worthy of receiving. I have news for you. You're not that important. I'm not that important. Guess what? My school will still continue whether I'm there or not. If Sabbath taught us anything and sabbatical has taught us anything, this church will still continue if I'm not here, if Pastor Mark's not here, if Pastor Derek is not here. Like, we are just not that important. Not even God himself was above the command to rest. You go back in Matthew, and you see in Matthew, it says, be humble. Like, God was humble. In Genesis 2, it says, by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all of his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, he rested from all the work of creating he had done. If you feel like you can't rest, God rested. Right? If you were like, I'm too busy to slow down, like, God rested. You're like, there's too much to do. Things will fall apart without me. Okay, God rested. And he just didn't rest from some of the work. He wasn't like, well, I'll just do the laundry, but like not the dishes. Right? It says he rested from all of his work. He rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So for those of you who are feeling very convicted by what I'm saying right now, can you even imagine what it would be like to have one day a week, even 12 hours, even 4 hours, where you rested from all work? Not just paid work, not just our jobs, but all work, including chores and errands and to-do lists and anything that does not, as Marie Kondo would say, like spark joy in you. Cleaning out your closet and organizing it, that's work. Don't do it. Scrolling through Instagram, bombarding your mind and brain with activity and thought, that is work. Give your brain a break. Can you even imagine what that would feel like? I love Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel in his book, The Sabbath, says, we rest not just from work, but even thinking about work. There's these studies that neuroscientists do that say that when we think about work, even if we're at home resting, it secretes the same stress chemicals in our body as if we were at work. Just thinking about work is stressful. So it's like we rest from all of it. We rest from even the thought of working. And I think that is part of like the key to this whole thing. If we want to truly experience the fruit of the discipline of Sabbath, it must be centered around rest from all of the work of life, not just the parts that are easy to let go of. And I know how difficult this can be for so many of us, myself included. Some of you are still working right now. You're checking your emails. You're like, I'm taking a nap. It's fine. You're thinking about what's happening this weekend with your kids or the schedules or all the other things you could be doing, but you came to church and you got to check it off the list, and you're just constantly working and working and working. It's like our brains are so wired for productivity. It's like we don't even think about it. It just happens. Like suddenly I'm on like my email. I'm like, what am I doing? Mark's talking about Wendy's. Like, pay attention, you know? I have to put my phone down. I would never do that to you. I only do it when Derek's talking. But it's so easy. Like, I'm here on staff, and if I'm not careful, I will pull out my phone and start doing something else. I'm like, what? Put your phone away. Right? Because our brains are so wired that to truly shut them down is a skill that requires consistent, observant discipline and humility that we must begin to cultivate. So as we end, let's talk really briefly about next steps. For those who struggle with the challenge to be observant, if that is you, I want you to think about that. Maybe you're a person who currently does not observe the Sabbath. You do not rest. You crash on the weekends. You are never not thinking about work, never not achieving, never not doing, never not striving. Your next step is to stop. You're welcome. Talk over. Just stop. Right? I know we talked about what it means to stop last week, so if you missed it, go back and watch that video. This week is supposed to be about rest, but listen, if you don't stop, you're never going to get to rest. How? How do you stop? You don't just remember, oh yeah, the Sabbath, one of those Ten Commandments. You begin to observe the Sabbath. I would suggest going cold turkey. Cut it out. Shut it down. Your body, your life probably needs like a drastic detox and rest. And maybe you just start with a few hours, right? Just a few hours on the same day every week. Build up to the 24 hours if that's your goal. I think a small note, but an important note, is like having a consistent and set time you Sabbath, and that time being the same time every week, is incredibly important. If we begin to compromise and move the Sabbath around to fit our schedules, we're not observing, we're remembering. Like, oh yeah, that thing I should do. Huh, I'll get to it Tuesday. That's not observing, right? We're not like, oh, Christmas, forgot to go shopping. We'll just move it to December 27th. Not gonna work, right? We pick a day, we pick a time, and we stick with it. Yeah. And when your first Sabbath comes and you wanna make excuses, because you forgot to do that presentation, or you forgot to pick up that thing you needed for work that week, or your kids' lunch, or your kids are complaining because their laundry isn't done, or like you just wanna clean the bathroom because your friends are coming over for dinner, you stop. You resist. Put your foot in the sand and you say, no, not even a little bit, not even an inch, because that is all it takes to get us right back into disobedience and productivity. But our goal is deep, deep soul rest, so we have to say no. Guess what? Work will still be there tomorrow. Your kids, they can learn to do their own laundry, or they can wear dirty clothes. Who cares? There's no judgment. Your friends, if they're real friends, they won't care if your bathroom's clean. Right? For those who struggle with the challenge to be observant, you just have to start. And you start by stopping. Okay, our second group of people. For those who are like, yes, I'm good at stopping. I'm good at resting. But I'm having a hard time being humble. I feel like, but there's like exceptions to the rule because I'm like super important and I'm like, you know, need to do this thing. Maybe you observe the Sabbath, but like Drew and I, it's often Sabbath light, right? So you quit some things, but not others. You're taking naps, but you aren't accessing like that deep soul rest. The challenge for you and for me is to rest from all the work, to rest not just our bodies, but our souls and our minds, to rest our ears from all of the noise and input and the chaos of this world, like to rest through meditation, through worship, through prayer. We rest from hurriedness and routine and things that like do not fill our souls. I love author Jen Wilkin. She says it like this. She says, our patterns of work and rest reveal what we believe to be true about God and ourselves. God alone requires no limits on his activity. But remember, he still rests. To rest is to acknowledge that we are humans, are limited by design. We are created for rest just as surely as we are created for labor. An inability or unwillingness to cease from our labors is a confession of unbelief, an admission that we view ourselves as creator and sustainer of our own universes. Ouch. I'm so guilty of that. I'm so guilty of thinking that I am the one doing all the things, making life happen. So guilty of that. And what I've had to learn over years and years of practice is that we are created for rest, but it's not going to happen by accident. Right? It happens when we become disciplined in being observant and disciplined in remaining humble. And just those two things alone, like those are not going to be easy, but they're so necessary. I want to just very briefly talk about what will happen if you don't learn to rest. You're like, yeah, cool talk, great, 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 cool for somebody else, but you don't know my situation. Like, I have to go work. You're like, great. But here's what will happen if you don't learn how to rest. There is a phenomenon in the animal kingdom called torpor. And most of us know about like animals, like bears that take these giant rests throughout the year called hibernation. But recently I learned about torpor, which is another type of rest. And torpor occurs in animals when they have a sudden and drastic decrease in resources and energy. If an animal doesn't have enough resources or energy to sustain themselves or their pace of life, really great example is little hummingbirds. They flap their wings so hard, so long. The physics don't make sense. They shouldn't be able to fly, but they fly constantly and they're just going, 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 going. If they don't have enough energy to sustain that pace of life, they will burn out and enter torpor. And this is something that can happen at any moment, at any time. And what happens is the animal's body involuntarily shuts down and remains this way until it replenishes its energy and resources. See, if we don't observe God's command for us to rest, then our burnout is inevitable. We become like those little hummingbirds. Our bodies, our minds will just shut down. I think we see this a lot, like when I know that I'm going too hard, I get sick. I never get sick. And suddenly my body's like, oh, we can't do life anymore. And you're like, cool, let me just lay here for 10 days. Like if I had just rested, I could have done 10 weeks of Sabbath, but no, now I'm sick for 10 days. Right? We're so much more susceptible to disease, to injury, both physical and mental. Has your brain just ever been tired? You're like, what is wrong? Like, I'm just riddled with anxiety and all these thoughts. It's because our bodies physically cannot sustain with the limited resources and energy that we have. And this, I think, is why Sabbath was not just a recommendation. It was a commandment. It wasn't something to simply remember, but something to observe. Because without it, we can't sustain this beautiful life abundant that God has for us. But thankfully, Sabbath, it's not something we need to master in one day. It's something that we are invited collectively as a community, but also as individuals to practice. Tish Harrison Warren, amazing author, she wrote Liturgy of the Ordinary, Sacred Practices in Every Day. Debbie gave me this book years ago. We did a whole series on it. But she says this, she says, we learn to rest by practice, by routine, over time. This is true of our bodies, our minds, and our souls, which are always intertwined. We're going to sing this last song by Amanda Cook, and it's titled Rest. And during this time, I want to encourage you to ask God what He wants your Sabbath to look like. I don't want you to think about what your Sabbath should look like. I want you to ask God what He thinks your Sabbath should look like. Because you're like, ooh, 2 hours sounds great. He's like, you need 24. You are about to be the little hummingbird on the side of the road, just exhausted in a state of paralysis if you don't stop. Right, so ask God, God, what do you want my Sabbath to look like? And then ask God to bring to mind things that you need to let go of in order to enter into that rest. And then ask God to help make you more observant and humble. That you would begin to trust and to know that He can handle it all when we choose to step away. The Bible says that we don't have because we don't ask. So ask God to give you the strength and the courage to fully engage in this beautiful gift of Sabbath. So if you'd stand up with me, I'm gonna pray over us and then we're gonna sing this last song together. God, my prayer is that you would begin to show each one of us what we're missing out on when we refuse to enter into your rest. God, reveal to us this morning the areas of disobedience. There's no better word for it. Disobedience in our lives that are keeping us from practicing your way of living in true soul rest. God, would you give us the courage to stop? Give us the determination to be observant. Give us perseverance to be humble. And give us a deep and godly desire for rest. In Jesus' name, amen.
You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.